Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to this special edition of Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. On today's program, we will feature part one of a two-part series with Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, MD, one of the nation's leading authorities on the prevention, treatment, and reversal of heart disease, and a pioneer in the field of lifestyle medicine. We will present a classic interview that I did with Dr. Esselstyn while in Hawaii, along with the first part of his classic lecture on reversing heart disease.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
We're honored to have Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, Jr., who is a renowned individual and physician from the Cleveland Clinic and also a pioneer in heart disease reversal research. Nice to have you here.
John, I'm proud and delighted to be here.
Heart disease is the number one killer in America today. Tell us about that.
That's unquestionably the case, and what we have to do is define the fact that we've really got to focus on eliminating this number one disease. For instance, we have over 500,000 people who will die this year of heart disease. There will be another 1.5 million people who will have a diagnosis of a new heart attack. There'll be another 3 million people who will have a so-called silent heart attack. They'll have severe indigestion, and this will be when their heart attack has occurred. But, you know, the exciting thing is the lesson that we learned really from World War II. When the Axis powers of Germany overran the Low Countries of Holland, Belgium, and occupied Norway, they actually took away a lot of their livestock, their chickens, their goats, their lamb, their sheep. And these countries were largely subsisting on a plant-based diet of grains, legumes, lentils, vegetables, and fruit. And there was a documentation in Norway of how their deaths from cardiovascular disease, from stroke and heart attack, during a time of greatest personal stress, when their country was occupied by the Axis powers of Germany, from 1939 to 1945, deaths from these diseases plummeted. And if we adapt the plant-based nutrition of these countries and achieve the same low blood cholesterol, blood fat levels, that means that we also ought to be able to arrest that disease. And that was the basic thesis behind the research that I started back in 1985.
And I'm very excited about that research you've been doing because you have conducted the longest running study to show that heart disease is reversible through a healthy meatless diet, actually. And tell us more about that.
Well, back in 1985, after my wife and I had been eating a plant-based diet for a year and our cholesterols had plummeted, I went to our Department of Cardiology and said, look, I'm not interested in practicing cardiology, but I am interested in helping you take your patients with severe heart disease and see if we can't really reduce their level of blood fats and blood cholesterol. And they were enthusiastic, and I ended up with a group of about 24 patients who were so severely ill with this disease that a number of them had been advised to go home and get ready to die by these expert cardiologists.
So the patients that you had on this meatless diet, what were the results that they experienced?
Very exciting. Their angina began to disappear, that their heart pain. They've lost weight. They not only felt better, but then after 5 years, we did the critical thing. We repeated a number of the angiograms, and we found striking results because when they were carefully measured and compared to the baseline angiograms, that is the outline of their arteries, before the program was started, and then 5 years into the program, there were often, we found, dramatic reversals of the disease. And this was so terribly empowering to these patients because it made them really feel now they're on the right track. And then, therefore, they were not depending on a physician. They're not depending upon a cardiologist. They're not depending upon a cardiac surgeon. What they have been able to do, they have been able to unleash the incredible therapeutic powerhouse that resides within each and every one of us. But once again, if you're going to have these kinds of exciting results, it truly has to be strict attention to detail. And the phrase that I ask any patient that I'm going to counsel, totally give up before I'll counsel them, is, sweetheart, this little bit can't hurt.
So if we have today who may have heart disease, they may have atherosclerosis, high cholesterol, what things do they need to do? What kind of results can they experience on this meatless diet that you recommend?
If they are really absolutely dotting all the I's and crossing the T's, using a plant-based diet, and they know on a regular basis, to every 6 weeks, that their total cholesterol is under 150, and their LDL, their bad cholesterol, is under 80, then they're absolutely, they're right on the money for abolishing the disease. As is, I will use an example. The young surgeon who replaced me as a chairman of the Breast Cancer Task Force, in 1996, at age 44, with a cholesterol of 156, he had a heart attack after he had finished surgery one day and was writing post-operative orders, this crushing pain in his chest. And he had a heart attack, and his angiogram of his coronary arteries was actually quite good, except the lower part of the main artery in the front of the heart was completely diseased. And it was too long a segment for any of these common interventions, and he couldn't have a bypass, and he couldn't have an angioplasty, and he was very depressed. So my wife and I had him out to the house, and we counseled him. And at that point, I had 10 years of data. And I said, Joe, you know, you really ought to do this. You've been eating this toxic American diet. And he said, I'll do it, but I'm not going to take any of the cholesterol-lowering drugs with it. He became the absolute personification of commitment to this program. And within 2.5 years, when they did another angiogram, that the diseased segment of his coronary artery was completely resolved. His disease was gone. And his life now is so solid and so empowered, he has absolutely zero fear of this disease now because he has made himself heart attack proof. Should people who don't have heart disease do this? When you look carefully at the battle casualties of Korea and Vietnam at an average age of 21 years in our GIs, at the time of their autopsy, if you look carefully at their coronary arteries without a microscope, 80% already have gross evidence of coronary artery disease. Now, these people, these guys haven't been diagnosed with coronary artery disease, but they're already loaded with it. What's going to happen to them 20 or 30 years later? Why? And the most important thing we haven't even talked about tonight is the fact that at age 50, most Americans, if you look at their brain scan with MRIs, begin developing these little unidentified white spots that we now know are tiny little strokes. Why in the world would you say with somebody who doesn't have symptomatic coronary heart disease not to go on a plant-based diet and let these kind of little strokes begin to develop until your memory goes sour when you're in your 70s and you lose your cognition? No, I don't think we can really escape that. Just because you may be somehow genetically gifted to get away without getting heart disease while you're eating the Western diet, there are so many other diseases that you are going to encounter if you continue to eat this way. And why do you want to have the opportunity to go into your senior years and not have that be when you're all your cognition and all of your intellect is absolutely right on the top? Why do you want to be somebody who has these severe personality changes, multiple strokes, in a rest home or nursing home? You want to be there enjoying your family, your children, your grandchildren, and ideally, your great, great grandchildren.
We will continue our special lecture presentation on reversing heart disease with Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn after this short break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
Coronary heart disease need never exist. And if it does exist, it need never progress. This is the headline we had in Cleveland about a year and a half ago when we had the threat of West Nile disease, and it was concerned because somebody from the west side of Cleveland might have died of this. Got headlines. But how many hundreds and hundreds of patients had died in Cleveland of heart disease that never got a headline? It's old news. When Dr. Herrick first described the coronary artery disease in a heart attack back in 1914,
That was news, but no longer. It just happens, we accept it. But when does it all start? Now, look at this young lad. He's getting a little chunky, and if you look carefully over here at this little pet, he's getting a little bit enlarged. And I even think if you look carefully at the fish and the relatives in the wall, they could be doing better. But the key is where you look at the television and what is playing on the television. The golden arches, and Dr. Castelli of the Framingham Study has said, when you see the golden arches of McDonald's, you're getting close to the pearly gates. Back in Ohio, where I'm living at the present time, before we had British Petroleum, we had Sohio gasoline. And this was one of their ads to try to not only encourage consumption of gasoline, but unfortunately also the manufacture of cardiovascular disease. Dave Thomas, who was the great pioneer and founder of Wendy's from Columbus, Ohio, famous for doing his own ads, but he didn't tell us about his quadruple coronary artery bypass that he'd had. And you all remember the Whopper. It takes two hands to handle the Whopper with Burger King. And who had the largest hands in the United States who was recruited? And in the 1970s, every time you saw the ad for Burger King and two hands handling the Whopper, you saw Wilt Chamberlain. Where is Wilt? Wilt has died of heart disease. Now, we know that this is not a disease of the elderly. This is a photograph I took in leaving Vietnam in 1968. We know that from the battle casualties in Korea, the battle casualties in Vietnam, at the average age of 20, 80% of these GIs at autopsy without a microscope were found to have gross evidence of coronary artery disease. Obviously, as this same pattern continues, these are the people that are going to be having the heart attacks in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and so on. But from an epidemiological standpoint, World War II was a fantastic breakthrough. It was recognized that when the Axis powers of Germany overran Holland, Belgium, and occupied Norway, they took away their sheep, their cattle, their goats, their chickens, and literally these populations were subsisting on a plant-based diet. Grains, legumes, lentils, vegetables, fruit. It was so powerful that when you looked at Norway, you try to see what happened in 1939, there was an absolute plummeting of deaths from cardiovascular disease, that is strokes and heart attacks, even though this was a time of greatest personal stress. But look what happened with the cessation of hostilities in 1945. Here in a time of greatest personal stress, when they're absolutely were destroying these diseases, they once again resumed the same type of eating of the meat and the dairy and the oils, and the disease came back. So much so that Emile Picard, who was the pathologist in Belgium, was telling his students in the pathology arena at autopsy, he said, look at these plaques. We never were seeing these during the war years. It was extremely powerful and a message to all of us about this disease. Now, we know that there are certain cultures where the disease is virtually absent. If you look at the rural Chinese, the Papua Highlanders in New Guinea, Central Africa, the Tarahumara Indians in northern Mexico, virtually no coronary artery disease. How 85% of heart attacks occur. What you're looking at is an artery with blood flowing in this direction, and on the side of the wall of the artery is the drawing of what we consider to be the plaque. And my arrow is trying to show you the cap over the plaque. And what happens in 87% of heart attacks is that this plaque is filled with foam cells, and these foam cells are filled with your bad cholesterol. And your bad cholesterol inside the foam cell begins to elaborate chemical substances that are going to thin out this area right at the upper end, right here. That eventually gets as thin as a cobweb. And now, the sheer force of blood ripping and flowing over that thin cobweb, it results in a tear. And we call that a plaque rupture. When your plaque is ruptured, you are now having extravasation or loss of plaque material is oozing out into the flowing blood. When that occurs, and it starts oozing out through this opening, the opening widens, and that material that comes out activates platelets, which respond by causing this clot. And this clot is now in a cascade of events leading to a larger clot, which in a matter of minutes completely blocks the entire artery. So dear old Uncle Ned goes out to his pickup truck, never sick a day in his life, sits in behind the wheel, turns the key, and that's the last thing he does. He has ruptured his plaque, the thrombosis has started across, completely occluded, and now all of the heart muscle, which is downstream from this blockage, has lost its blood supply and is losing its life. And if that is a massive bit of muscle that is lost, then Uncle Ned is going to have a massive heart attack and die, or he's going to have a significant heart attack. So this is the mechanism that is key. So what do we do when we treat this disease? We obviously want to, therefore, put into reverse this series of events. And I want you to keep thinking as we talk further tonight about right here, this whole process. We want to keep that cap over the plaque thickened, because if you keep the cap over the plaque thickened, you will have made yourself heart attack proof. All right, a couple words in the language that I despise, moderation. Moderation literally kills. In the 1990s, we had a whole series of large studies in Australia, Scandinavia, and in England, as well as in this country. And they showed that when you took a statin and lowered your cholesterol, that you could prevent fewer new heart attacks, fewer new heart attack deaths, and 30% fewer interventions were needed, such as angioplasty or heart bypass. But what about the other 70%? This is not cancer. This is a benign disease. And how can we accept the fact that 70% continue to go on and have progression of the disease? When your whole focus is on a mechanical treatment of this disease, there's a significant mortality. In a 10-year period, 250,000 people, 250,000 people die immediately during these procedures. How many people died in the World Trade Center? 2,900. How many die in 10 years having their intervention? 250,000. Talk about weapon of mass destruction. Morbidity, a lot of the people that survive have a heart attack, have another stroke, have infection. The expense of the cardiology budget presently is $250,000,000,000 per year. And if you do have a successful intervention, there is an increasing failure rate and the benefits erode with the passage of time. My approach is I ask the patients when I counsel them to think of their heart disease as a low-grade brush fire. And at the present time, most physicians are treating this not pouring gallons of gasoline on fire, but you're still pouring quarts of gasoline on the fire. And as a result, the patient may have their first bypass, they'll have more disability, there'll be progressive stenosis, they'll have to have a second bypass, progressive disability, and eventually death of disease. Again, a benign disease. I don't want my patients to put a single thimbleful of gasoline on the fire. I want the fire to go out. There. Out. Now, we'll just back up for a minute, and here's the problem with moderation. When you talk to moderation to this entire room, you know, you're going to get many, many different opinions. Some are just going to say, I won't have any tonight. Others, I'll just have half. Somebody else may be even more aggressive. Dwayne, halfway through his hearty man breakfast, felt several of his small arteries slamming shut. While for years this was a cartoon that I had in this presentation, it's now the actual truth. When Dr. Vogel took two different groups of Hopkins medical students to McDonald's, one group ate the cornflakes, the other group ate the McMuffin breakfast. He did a so-called brachial artery tourniquet test, where when you have the blood pressure cup pumped up over systolic pressure for 5 minutes, you measure the difference in diameter in the brachial artery with an ultrasound, because when you release the tourniquet, we have what we call compensatory vasodilatation, and it is there in all of us normally. It was there after the cornflake breakfast, but 120 minutes after the McMuffin breakfast, it was gone, clearly showing that literally with a high-fat meal, there is immediate injury. The Monell Chemical Senses Center in Philadelphia has shown us when they compare people who are eating a 35% fat diet like the American people, 20%, or down to the 10 or 11% which I had in our research patients, only one of those parties completely loses their craving for fat after 90 days. Yes, that's the group It is down to 10 or 11%. So I want to just focus for a minute on our 12-year arrest and reversal study. Actually, right now, these patients are at, most of them are at 17 years, but this was a study that was reported in the peer-reviewed literature in preventive cardiology. The epidemiology data that I shared with you earlier was clearly a great motivator for this. And since I had to continue with my regular surgical duties, this was limited to 24 patients, and they all had severe triple vessel disease, ranging in age from 44 to 68. And the goal was to keep their total cholesterol well under 150 and their bad cholesterol, their LDL, under 80, just as we see in those nations where the disease is non-existent. The diet was to be plant-based of 11% fat. I did use a cholesterol-lowering medication as a supplement in most of these patients. There was no meditation that was required, and there was no structured exercise. Now, it's not that I don't think that exercise is wonderful. It's not that I don't think that meditation is wonderful. But the rock upon which this study was most likely to flounder would have been lack of patient compliance. How do you get compliance in these patients? They didn't know that this was going to work. A number of these patients were so ill they had been sent home by expert cardiologists to get ready to die. There was nothing that I could see in my review of the literature that suggested that these nations where the disease was non-existent, that it was due to the fact that they meditated or that they had structured exercise. So I also took a mantra from what I'd used for patients with cancer. And patients with cancer are not afraid to suffer. Patients with cancer are not afraid to die. But patients with cancer are afraid of being abandoned by their physician or by their family. And I made darn sure that these patients were not going to feel abandoned. The first 5 years, I saw every one of these patients every 2 weeks myself and went over every morsel they ate, and they had a full blood cholesterol determination every 2 weeks for 5 years. So they were getting feedback immediately whether they were achieving that 150 goal and getting that LDL under 80, as we had said. And that was happening. Now, the other thing is, if you pile all this onto patients, if you have them trying to meditate 20 minutes in the morning and they get up, meditate 20 minutes again and later in the afternoon or early evening, 40 minutes on the exercise bicycle, plus the most significant nutritional modification that they've ever known, something's got to give. Each of us has within us just so many behavioral modification units. And they knew, and I knew, that I wanted everything focused on their nutrition. I was a very uncompromising, authoritative, and yet I think caring presence for them. We wanted them to eat the grains. That's all your cereals, breads, and pasta. Legumes, lentils, vegetables, and fruit, but no oil. No fish, no fowl, no meat, no dairy, no oil, no monounsaturated oils like olive oil or canola oil. There are six wonderful studies in the literature that clearly show what a rascal these are. There is not one study in the literature that shows you can arrest and reverse this disease with those kinds of oils. They do supply extra fat. Olive oil has 16% artery clogging saturated fat within it. When I wrote to Dr. Thomas Lee, who was the editor of the Harvard Heart Letter several years ago, because I'd been getting it for years and I really admire Dr. Lee, and he's a skilled and excellent professional, but he had some articles in there on the use of the so-called heart-healthy fats, such as olive oil. And I wrote to him and I said I was puzzled and skeptical about his article on the heart-healthy fats. Could he please provide me with the references that would support that? And I also sent him the references that I had that showed that it clearly was a detriment. And I also sent him a copy of our study. 6 months later, he wrote back, "Dear Dr. Esselstyn, thank you for sending me that material. I would agree with you that as we proceed to address this most difficult of diseases, we should remain flexible." No data. So, as it stands, oil is out. The key is you have your initial interview with the patient and spouse. You must take time. No physician seeing 40 patients a day can do this. Now it takes me about, if I'm doing an individual couple, it may take me up to 3 hours. And you might say, well, how can you do that if you're in a busy, busy practice? Well, you as a physician don't always have to do it. We have been able to counsel and show nurse clinicians and physician's assistants how this can be done. And they can also do it with a group of 12, 15, or 20 patients, theoretically, at a time. But you must spend the time with people to have them fully comprehend this, because the reason our study stands out and is different from all the others is because of attention to detail. Before I would counsel somebody, now they have to agree there is a phrase that they will forever give up, which is, "Sweetheart, this little bit can't hurt." So they had the bi-monthly visit, they had their blood pressure and cholesterol checked, we had periodic group meetings together, and they liked the fact that Ann and I were also eating the same diet. The baseline cholesterol for these people as an average when they started was 237. As you can see on the next slide, during this first 5 years, they kept it well under 150, and their bad cholesterol, their LDL, was well under 100. It was actually a 76 in the first 5 years. Triglycerides remained stable. At 12 years, they were still well under 150, and their LDL was down around in the 80 range. Again, triglycerides were stable. But this was the one that really made their money. Their bad cholesterol was so low. And what do we find? This is about as small an improvement as your eye will see. And this is a 10% improvement in the left anterior descending coronary artery in a 67-year-old pediatrician. The arrow here in 1987 is 10% narrower, and it has widened 10% here. These angiograms, I might add, have all been reviewed in triplicate in our angiography core laboratory by two senior technicians who have great expertise in national trials. In addition to doing it in triplicate, they had a gap of 6 months to avoid bias of recall in this analysis. Now, here we have a 58-year-old factory worker with a 20% improvement in the circumflex artery that you see here, and it's 20% wider over here. Certainly, this can be done. And this security guard, who was 54 years old and retired, this was a 30% improvement from here to here in his right coronary artery.
We hope you enjoyed part one of our two-part special series on reversing heart disease with Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn. So tune in to Health and Longevity next week on this station to hear part two and Dr. Esselstyn's presentation. That's all for this week's program. Until next time, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.